Did you think about old George Beverly Shea up there singing, "I'd rather have Jesus"? Now, they don't know who we're talking about. But George Beverly Shea wrote the book on that, and that was beautiful. Senior adult singers, thank you. And Peggy, thank you. And Jim, thank you for leading us in worship today. You know, I consider myself to be a fairly forgiving person. I mean, when you're a preacher, it helps. It sort of goes along with the territory. You sort of have to learn how to forgive and move on. But I'll tell you what really bothers me. It's when I see children who are hurt. When I see children who are neglected and abused. We had a situation this week, one of the saddest things I've seen in a long time, that involved two precious little children. It just tore me out of my frame. There was a woman who had two little children whose husband just walked out on her one day. Decided he didn't want to be married anymore. He didn't want the responsibility of being a father anymore. And he just leaves. And then he finds a younger woman and, you know, is one of those. Well, he left his former wife and his two children almost destitute. Just the emotional baggage of just walking out was bad enough. But then he wouldn't pay his child support. And she became increasingly angry and bitter and just full of hatred. And so she went to see her rabbi, who happened to be Harold Kushner. And she was telling him about this and how bad it was and all the feelings that she had. And do you know what his advice was? He said, "I think you need to forgive your husband." And as soon as he said that, she reacted angrily and said, "But he doesn't deserve it." She said, "I will never forgive him for all of the terrible things that he's done to me and he's done to my children." In just a moment, I'm going to tell you what Dr. Kushner said in response. In this story that William shared with us, Simon Peter, who's often the leader among the disciples, Simon Peter is the impetuous one. Simon Peter's the guy who has the answers before Jesus asks the questions. You know, he's one of those. And Simon Peter asks what appears to be a rather innocent question. Lord, how many times should I forgive? And then he said, 7 times? And I bet when he said that, he kind of looked at the other disciples like, "I'm going to forgive 7 times. And the reason he was like that is because the Jewish religious law only required you to forgive 3 times. Somebody hurts you, somebody does something wrong, they sin against you, then according to the Jewish religious law, you were to forgive them once, twice, even 3 times, but then after that, that's it. 3 strikes and you're out. And I really think Simon Peter was thinking, if I say 7 times, Jesus is going to say, "Simon Peter, you are the man. I mean, here you are willing to forgive over twice as many times as is required of you. That is just absolutely wonderful." But what does Jesus say? He blows Simon Peter and the disciples out of the water. And he said, you're not supposed to forgive 7 times, but 70 times 7. And you're not to take that literally. That just means you're always supposed to forgive forever and ever and ever. And then he tells them this story, this parable, that if the first thing blew them out of the water, this is going to blow them off the planet. It's about a fella who owes an astronomical debt. In fact, you say, how in the world could anybody incur a debt like this? 10,000 talents. Depending on who you read, and I bet if you have a study Bible, it'll have some little footnotes into what that meant. A talent, 1 talent could be as much as 1 year's worth of wages to as many as 15 years of wages. But the point is, it was an amount of money that was so huge there would be no way this guy could ever pay it back. And he goes and he pleads for mercy. He said, man, he said, there, listen, you just be patient with me. Just have mercy on me and I'll pay you back, which there was no way he could pay him back. But the king has mercy. He forgives him. And then what does the fellow do? He finds a guy that owes him 100 denarii. Now, the comparison would be this. If 10,000 talents equals $30 million, 100 denarii would equal $60. That would be the difference, the huge disparity. And you know the story. He does not forgive the guy who only owes him the 100 denarii, the 60 bucks. And then the king finds about it, throws him in prison, and simply says this. If you're not willing to forgive somebody else, then I'm not going to forgive you. There are some good reasons to forgive. Number one, Jesus said we should. And I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold, right? So if Jesus says we ought to do it, then that ought to be reason enough. There's a second reason, the one I just mentioned. And the scripture is very clear. If we don't forgive others, we cannot experience forgiveness. A few moments ago, we prayed the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. But there's a third reason. And I think this is, well, not even any better than Jesus saying we should do it, but this is the real reason we should do it. It's so that we can live. So that we can experience life in the fullness. Forgiveness is not a passive resignation. Oh, well, I guess I'll just let that go. I can't do anything about it. But forgiveness is a proactive, positive, joyful initiative that allows me to put what is in the past, and to move ahead so that I can move forward and experience life to the fullest. So that I can truly live. So that I can live without all of the anger and the bitterness and the baggage that comes when I refuse to forgive. There are a couple of Greek words for forgiveness. One simply means to let it go, to walk away. We'll never forget about it, but we can leave it behind. But I want to get back to the story. When the lady said to Rabbi Kushner, he doesn't deserve forgiveness. What he did to me and my children is so terrible that I can never forgive him. Dr. Kushner said, of course he doesn't deserve forgiveness. But he also doesn't deserve to have the power over you to turn you into a bitter, angry, and resentful woman. You see, the problem with refusing to forgive is what it does to us. We can be justified, we can be righteous in our anger, because when people hurt us, when people sin against us, it's significant. And it wounds us. But if we cannot let it go, then it will destroy the rest of our life. One of the most remarkable stories of the 20th century is the story of Nelson Mandela and the fight against apartheid. Do you realize that he stayed in prison for 27 years? The day he walked out of prison, this is what he said. As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew that if I didn't leave my bitterness and my hatred behind, I would still be in prison. We need to forgive so we can learn how to live. Recently, the scientific world has discovered just how important forgiveness is. Forgiveness will enable you to live a healthier life. Forgiveness can boost your self-esteem. It can lower your blood pressure. It can help with your cholesterol. Let me just share with you what a few scientists, psychologists, psychiatrists are saying. Forgiveness is an intellectual decision you make to give up your anger and feelings of revenge. Forgiveness is letting go of anger and hurt and moving on. And it has remarkable healing power in the lives of those who utilize it. Psychologist Paul Coleman said, "Forgiveness is more than a moral imperative or a theological dictum. It is the only means, given our humanness and our imperfections, to overcome hate and condemnation and proceed with the business of growing and loving." And Robert Enright, a professor at the University of Wisconsin, said, "My biggest surprise is how powerful forgiveness actually is for emotional healing." He said, "I thought it would make a difference. But when we started our studies," he said, "we have found that our findings have been very strong and have withstood the test of time. It makes a huge difference in the lives of others." I graduated from high school in 1972. A few weeks after I graduated, there was a picture that appeared in every major newspaper in this nation. It was a picture from the Vietnam War. When I graduated from high school in 1972, if I had not been going to college, I would have gone to Vietnam. It was a picture that I know you remember. There was a napalm bomb on this village in South Vietnam. And the picture is a group of horrified children who are running away. And there's that one little girl with her arms outstretched. She had been set on fire by the bomb. It had burned her clothes off. And she's running down the road with this look of horror and terror and screaming. You remember that? You remember that picture? I remember seeing that, and it just did something to me, as it did to everyone. And I often wondered what happened to that little girl. Well, only recently I found out. That little girl's name is Kim Pook. She tells the story in an interview with NPR. The date was June the 8th, 1972. She said, "I remember the airplanes getting closer and lower, and there were four bombs that fell down. And suddenly I felt fire everywhere, all around me. And I saw the fire all over my body. My clothes were burned off by the fire." She said, "I was only 9 years old, but I remember my thoughts at that moment. I would be ugly. People would treat me in a different way. A soldier gave me something to drink and poured water over my body, and that was the last thing I remember before I collapsed." It was several days later when she regained consciousness. She was in a hospital where she would stay for 14 months, and she would undergo 17 different surgeries. She said, "It was such a difficult time. When I went home from the hospital, I found out that our home and everything we had been destroyed by the bombs. We lost everything. We existed from day to day. And I also suffered pain, itching, headaches. I was in pain all of the time. But my long stay in the hospital had made me dream about becoming a doctor. But my studies were cut short by the local government. They wanted me to be a symbol for the government and would not even allow me to return to school. The anger inside of me was as high as a mountain. It was hatred as high as a mountain. I hated my life. I hated all people who were normal because I was not, and I wanted to die. I spent my daytime reading. And one day, I picked up the Bible. This is what she said to NPR. On Christmas 1982, I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. It was an amazing turning point in my life. God helped me to learn how to forgive. That's the most difficult of all lessons. It didn't happen in a day, and it wasn't easy, but I finally got it. Forgiveness made me free from hatred. I still have scars on my body and severe pain most every day, but my heart is cleansed. Napalm is very powerful, but faith, forgiveness, and love are much more powerful. We would not have war at all if everyone could learn how to live with true love and hope and forgiveness. It's an amazing story. But there's more to that story. There was an army captain by the name of John Plummer. He was in the team that planned the napalm bombing of the South Vietnamese city. The day after the bombing, the picture, the haunting picture of this little girl was printed in Stars and Stripes, the military newspaper. When he saw the picture, he collapsed. He was devastated because he knew the decision that he made to order the bombing had resulted in that little girl being hurt and harmed. His friends told him that he did everything he could to keep from having what the military calls collateral damage, but he would not be comforted. For 24 years, he dealt with this guilt. He dealt with this pain. It was more than just trying to find peace. It was trying to find some type of reconciliation. It destroyed his life. He lost his wife. He lost his health. He lost his hope. And then on Veterans Day, 1996, there was an event at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. He traveled there with a group of other pilots. As he was standing there, there was a small woman who took the stage, and she spoke into the microphone and she said, "My name is Kim Phuc." He froze. He couldn't take it in. For 24 years, he had been haunted by this guilt, and now here she was. And this is what she said. "I'm not bitter, even though the burns I suffered even to this day cause me pain. I long ago forgave the one who bombed our village." John Plummer wrote on a note, "I am that one," sent it to her, and he made his way through the crowd to the front, and he told her, "I'm the reason that your village was bombed." And he collapsed in tears. But she held out her arms, those arms that had been burned, and she embraced him and said, "I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you." Today, John Plummer is a United Methodist minister in Virginia. He's turned his life around because he's been forgiven. I don't know what it is in your life. We all have hurts. We've all been wounded in different ways. But whatever it is, we have to let it go. Because another Greek word for forgiveness is the word kairos. It simply means grace. We don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. None of us deserve forgiveness. But if God can forgive us, if Kim Puck can forgive the man who almost destroyed her life, then surely we can forgive and move on and find life in the fullest.